today on Not Sam Wrestling. What more can I say? Shawn Michaels.
This is Not Sam Wrestling.
Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Hey, 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 welcome to Not Sam Wrestling, episode 425. Dropping an early one on you today because it's a really, really special episode. This is something that I've wanted to do for quite a while. You know, I have the esteemed privilege of getting to travel to Orlando for all of NXT's premium live events to help host those pre-shows, those kickoff shows with Mackenzie Mitchell and various other fantastic broadcasters. And what I've gotten to see, especially right now, because right now we're on the cusp, we're on the verge of not only Deadline happening this weekend, but it was announced that NXT is doing what a lot of NXT fans have wanted for a long time, and that's going back out on the road. That the next premium live event that NXT does outside of Deadline will be in Charlotte, North Carolina. They are leaving. NXT as a unit is leaving the Performance Center for a televised event for the first time since Stand and Deliver. Stand and Deliver is the only time that they've left that Performance Center literally since the pandemic. And they are doing it in Charlotte, North Carolina, February 4th for Vengeance Day. I hope that I'm going to see all of you out there that I can possibly see, because now is the time to support this brand. And one of the great things that I get to see going down to NXT is I get to see Shawn Michaels in action as the guy in charge of that brand. And the reason that that is so great to see is because, you know, they say don't meet your heroes, right? And part of that is because the reason that they're your heroes is because you have developed an insane enthusiasm for whatever it is that they do, generally speaking. And you don't want to meet your heroes sometimes because they may not have the same appreciation for what they do as you do. But when I tell you, when I think about the people that I have encountered in life that have the passion for professional wrestling higher than any fan that I know, Shawn Michaels is one of the very few names on that list. Shawn Michaels is a guy who, after everything that he's been through, not only eats, sleeps, and breathes this thing, but does it in a way that he gets off on the idea of cool stuff happening. It's not about anything besides, look at the cool stuff that we can do in a wrestling ring. Look at the amazing stories that we can tell in a wrestling ring. And the fact that at this stage in his life, he's still doing it now, maybe on a higher level than he's ever done it, is such a cool thing to bear witness to. And I've wanted to sit down and really talk to Shawn Michaels. I've talked to him a few times before. You know, I've spoken to him, like, I think when he was on one of his book tours. I had a great phone conversation, a phone interview with him several years ago, I think promoting an autograph signing or something, and it made me rethink the way I think about character arcs. That conversation with Shawn Michaels was the one when he told me about his theory on characters. It was before he had done the match in Saudi, and he was talking about why he didn't want to come back and why he thought that the story of this character, Shawn Michaels, that had been told from the time he was a member of the Rockers tag team all the way up until he retired with The Undertaker, is this amazing story that you don't want to touch. And it made me realize that sometimes when we watch wrestling, we watch in these little segments, right? And we think about these little moments. But at the same time, if we pan out from the moments and we look at these massive arcs that are just built right in front of our eyes over years and years and years, it is a remarkable thing. And Shawn Michaels is one of the characters that's been able to do that. So I started doing the work, asking around, hey, how about leading up to one of these NXT premium live events I come in early. I come to Orlando a little early, and I sit down and just talk wrestling with Sean. It's just something that I really want to do. And the team at NXT and WWE PR made it happen, man. Shawn Michaels made it happen, man. And I am really happy to be able to share this conversation with you. There's a lot that I still need to get into with him. There's a lot that I didn't even get into my appreciation for the story that he and Chris Jericho told. Not the WrestleMania 19 match, but the story that he and Jericho told suited Chris Jericho. Just one of my favorite storylines ever. But I tried to hit as much as possible with Sean, talking about what's going on today, the new stuff, as well as some of the key moments in his career, talking about the Hell in a Cell match, talking about Bret at WrestleMania 12, talking about the run that he made on his return, the way he looks at the stories with Ric Flair, the way he looks at the stories with The Undertaker, and so much more. I loved getting to listen to the answers to these questions, and I think that you will too. If you'd like to watch the interview in its entirety, it's available and shot like a damn movie, if you ask me, by the one and only Hot Dog, over at youtube.com/NotSamWrestling. If watching the interview is your thing, watch it there. But enjoy however you do it. Here on Not Sam Wrestling is Shawn Michaels. Well, what a treat this is for me. Absolutely amazing to be here, deadline week, and getting to talk in the Performance Center to the man himself, the showstopper, the main event, the icon, the heartbreak kid, the man who was really good with nicknames, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, well, when you don't have much else, man, you got to you rattle off enough names, it makes you feel important, that's for sure.
What to you was the more surprising run and the way it went and has gone? The second run in 2002 or this run where you're back as a full-time creative senior vice president in the WWE?
Well, I guess now this one is more surreal because I don't know. In 98, I didn't see any of them happening. And then in 2002, to get the second chance and for it to go as well and as long as it did, I'll say this. I guess I'm going to say that one because that one has helped me understand and appreciate the depth and the enormity of what that second chance was. You know, I was already thankful and appreciative and obviously blown away and often very like nostalgic and reflective about it. But now I'm here and I'm doing this, and this is the one where you go like, oh, no way. You know what I mean? I never saw that coming. The other one was least still involved in the original dream, which was being a wrestler, being a WWE superstar. Doing this was, I mean, never. I can say when Pat Patterson made it look so fun and you know, just being a part of the creative process, that's one of those things where I always said, like, now if I could do it like Pat, you know, Pat being his golf shirt and his shorts and just driving people crazy. I mean, what do you do this? And he, you know, just doing it his way. And you know, he came and went, made his own schedule as he so chose.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? Seemed plausible, but just didn't know where that was going to end up.
Do you feel like that's the groundwork that's being laid right now? Like, okay, if I hustle hard and put in the hours now, eventually I'll be that old man, like, making my own hours.
So that's what I came in this door doing. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm saying. Now I've gotten lassoed into this, and so I don't know that I'm ever going to be able to go back.
You can't.
To the other one. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. Once you're in the quicksand, it's like, oh, my goodness, you don't realize it. You're up to your neck.
And because I remember – we may have even had conversations about it. When you were talking about it, you said, this thing that you're doing now, like, that's one thing I could never do, right? Being part of the daily grind and the management and all this stuff. Do you wrap your head around it in such a way where you go, well, if I could do it my way, if I could do it in a way where we're all having fun, if I could do it in a way where that's interjected, I think I might actually be able to
do it. Well, so, and again, I came here, look, Hunter played me like a fiddle, and God bless him, and he knows me, but so I came in, like I said, just making my own schedule, and I'll just try it out, and you do what you're comfortable with. And look, because this, you know, this stuff is a part of me, and so I just started doing more. Look, I don't know, I wouldn't be here if the circumstances, didn't develop with Hunter the way they did. I wouldn't have felt the need to, I don't know, you know what I mean, to initiate and or to help or to take right. over something like that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I was put in a position, and then it was, and it wasn't even reluctant. It was really, I get put into a position, but now you want to be there for your friends. So, it was really a combination of something so unbelievably personal. And then, of course, the business that I love. And again, and I love this place. And so, and a company that's been faithful to me for 35 plus, I've forgotten how long. It's just since I was 23 and I'm 57. So, again, that was the beginning of it. And then before you know it, they described you like, well, what you're doing is technically, you know what I mean? And then they give you this position and this title.
You've accidentally already done the job. Right, it's like, we're just going to give you the position.
Exactly.
You're doing it.
So, and I'm like, okay. So yeah, but it's still done. I still get to do it kind of, I don't know, like my way. Again, I put this on for these. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
But everybody knows I come into this place in my regular getup, which is Sean wears shorts and a tank top even uh-huh. in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one, you know, one upside about Florida. You know, shorts and a tank top are biz cash.
You know, I was thinking about when you were kind of announcing the whole new match type, the Iron Survivor Challenge, and how, you know, it's a difficult thing to have to not only, now we're not only, you know, kind of explaining a story to fans and character to fans, but now this whole new match type that you guys have thought of in your head, and it's like, this is how it's going to work. But then I was like, man, if there was ever a person to translate a match type to WWE fans, because I started mentally going through your list of the matches that you were involved in that WWE fans were seeing at least televised for the first time. And it's like ladder match, Hell in a Cell, Elimination Chamber, can't punch each other in the face, SummerSlam 92. I mean, it's like there's so many. Do you have a Royal Rumble rule named after you, right?
Yeah.
Innovation is, I guess, what you've always done. Do you have a favorite one of those? Ladder match. Did I say ladder match?
Yeah,
ladder
you did.
Yeah, okay, good. Good.
Match.
Iron Man match.
Iron Man match, yeah. So I will say, I think the Hell in the Cell was my favorite. And look, I think that's, again, I think, just because, that was one that I can remember throwing out to them because I felt like the storyline, and it wasn't obviously the Cell, but it was, in my mind, I remember an old Tommy Rich Buzz Sawyer angle that I saw in Georgia Championship Wrestling where they had a regular cage, but they put a top on it. And so that's what I kind of suggested. And, it's like, oh, that's kind of just like a cage match. Like, okay, but then they take that idea and then they make what is now the Hell in a Cell. And the first time I walked into St. Louis and I saw it there, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I got to get on that. I got to get on top of that. I got to climb. I mean, this was just, it looked like, it's like the kid in the candy store. It just looked like it was going to be so much fun.
Uh-huh.
And it was. And the thing is, it went some 50 some odd minutes. We had no idea really, so much of that was just out there on the fly. And of course, as everybody knows by now, Taker and I weren't the closest of guys, but we just had such a chemistry that was insane. And so again, it was just so fun on so many different levels. So I think I always lean towards that one, and you're getting color and
it's this amazing match, but then there's also just so much story that's happening as you're going. And it's still, I think for a lot of people, there's the Undertaker and Mankind, obviously, for the fall off the top and everything, but Undertaker and Shawn is still that standard kind of
self matches, though. But it's you know, there can only be one first,
right?
You know what I mean? And again, it's funny because, you know, Waller was cutting the promo last week, and again, you know, obviously not being you know, egregious, but I mean, yeah, you always remember your first. And,
yes.
And as I say, that's I always you know, I was kind of like, we always joked about it. I was kind of the guinea pig for stuff, but I loved that challenge, and I loved that they trusted me with it, and that's, you know, we come full circle, you know, that, and that's sort of what this was. You know, we were sort of, it's one of those things that, you know, a lot of stuff with us down here happens at last minute. And, you know, there's a December opening for a premium live event, you know, TLC is not going to happen. And, and so it's, something where, like, now I get, could we maybe do it? Like, would you guys be interested? And like, oh my goodness, yes. But what are we going to do now? You know, and so, and, you know, we're just coming off of Halloween Havoc, so it can't be too hardcore, you know, stipulation type, you know, oriented, because that's what the other one was. So how can it be a bit more wrestling based? And I don't know, and focused a little bit, you know what I mean? A little bit more disciplined. And again, it's the creative process that I love being a part of. And again, you know, I've got a wonderful creative team. Obviously, it helps me every step of the way. We close ourselves in that big padded room, you know, and don't come out for, you know, days. But that's, you know, and again, and look, and now, and we get to try stuff here. We get to try stuff. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. But we're going to continue to do that. And it doesn't daunt me. Like, if it doesn't work, it kind of rolls off my back. And I think we're held to a, you know, I guess at maybe an easier standard, and I'm okay with that, because that's what this is, developmental, and let's throw some things up against the wall, let's try some stuff and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that standard is okay when you're using it for all it's worth. When it's like, okay, if we're allowed to try things, then let's try things. Like, let's really do that. When you going back to the Hell in a Cell, when you're laying there on the ground and Kane finally makes his appearance, and this story that's been building pays off, are you aware of, oh my God, this is really working? Like, can you, from your position, go, yeah, this is exactly what this is supposed to be?
Yeah. Well, look, there's a point in sort of every match. Now, I've never felt like, again, like you're making history or this is something people will remember forever. The business, and of course myself mentally and maturity wise, wasn't able to, you know, to see myself 20 or 30 years later looking back on a body of work that I was very proud of. You were just so in the moment, so it was just about what you did that night. But in every match, you get to a point to where you feel the, from our standpoint, it's like, oh, we got him, we've done something really, this is nice. And certainly by that one, it's the end, and it's gone the way it's gone, and all of a sudden, you know what I mean? And even in all that noise, and of course, you know, you hear just, that's gotta be Kane, you know what I mean? That just some of those classic lines that are, you know, that are there, and then he comes in, and you're just sort of watching it all happen out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you do, you know, it's something special, but it never has sort of the, I don't know, like I said, the enormity as it does 20 years later.
Sure.
Because it's something that, like I said, we just never realized. We were just a bunch of guys out there having fun, cool pro wrestling matches, and then all of a sudden it becomes, you know, a real part of people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find yourself reflecting more now that you're doing so much teaching and so much, like, bringing up this generation and going, actually, I can give you some advice on that, because I have lived through that. Because, I mean, even, you've got guys now, especially now, they're having their first big live shows. Their first for Stand and Deliver last year for a lot of people on that show. It's their first time in front of an arena. And I wondered if you go back to kind of like the Hoosier Dome, like WrestleMania 8, where it's like, now let's see if, okay, you want to be a single star?
Right.
Let's see what happens.
In a stadium.
Yeah,
exactly.
Tito Santana. Like, yeah.
Yes. And yes, I do. And because that's, I feel like that's the best that I can do, is helping them understand that I was there. I went through it. And everything you're going through is perfectly normal. And again, to let them know that, you know, one of the things I always say is, I tell them, I, you know, Don't worry. I've been doing this a long time. One thing I'm sure of, the sun will rise tomorrow. We will have another day, and next week we will be doing another two-hour live show. So whatever mistake you might have made tonight, don't dwell on it. Don't harp on it. In six more days, you'll have another chance to make good on it. And it is, right? Because I don't want them, because it's something that we kind of did. And look, and there's a I've been doing this long enough, and I am very reflective, probably too reflective, and they probably wish I wasn't, because it often turns into a bit of a lecture. But I take this so serious, and there are so many young, you know, impressionable minds here. I want, and this business is tough in the first place. I want to make this whole thing and this process as easy on them as I can. All the mental stuff will happen without me trying to help it along. You know what
right.
I mean? So I want to do my best to use whatever experiences I had to alleviate whatever anxiety or pressures they might be going through.
I feel like the sort of Mr. WrestleMania moniker kind of started with what, for me, I feel like there's two quintessential WrestleMania runs for you, and both the 90s and the 2000s version of you had one. But, you know, you've always had great WrestleMania matches, but there's just something so special when you look at it chronologically to go to 10, 11, and 12. It's just this, like, amazing trifecta where it's almost like at 10, you were given something, right? This isn't the main event yet, but you're going to mm-hmm. be given something, and you took every possible thing you could and stole the show, and then you get to 11. And it's like, well, you'll get the title match, you'll get the main event, you get to work with Diesel, but it's not the last match on the show. Right. And then you get to 12, and it's like this huge sort of culmination, like, okay, you'll get the main event and you'll get an hour at a time when really in WWE there wasn't. I remember as a child, I remember watching WrestleMania 12 and Roddy Piper getting in the ring and explaining the Iron Man match and going, I love wrestling more than anything in the world. I can't watch a match for an hour.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then getting to WrestleMania and being like, what? That was the first time I realized maybe there's something to this. Maybe I can watch a match for an hour.
Well, look, it was a huge undertaking for us as well. But again, that was the challenge. And again, as I've mentioned many times, oh, my goodness, not a better guy to be out there with than Brett, honestly. And I know everybody always dwells on our, you know, on our rivalry and our differences. But I think we both would agree, like, if we were going to be out there with somebody, we'd want to be out there with each other for sure going through that. And it was. So I think to answer your question, it for me anyway, it was certainly a building and a confidence builder for me to go from 10 to 11 to 12. It's sort of that again, that coming of age. That's why we did the Boyhood Dream, because it was very real in that respect. It was certainly at 10 was me proving, I think, maybe I can't really say from a fan standpoint, but certainly from a company standpoint, that I'm a guy you can go with. I'm a guy you can lean on, if you know what I mean, if you'll give me a shot. And then 11 was, okay, we'll put you in there, but as you say, but with our, you know, with our guy, you know. And then the next one, and now that's a big, you know, now it's two guys that are sort of, you know what I mean, you're moving away from the traditional main guy of WWE's past. And that, so that even at 12, it was a big moment for both Brett and I.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was, you know, for him, just, you know, winning the championship. It was a very monumental time, you know, I think in wrestling, and even, you know, from a company standpoint, was he and I doing our best to show you that you didn't have to be one dimensional with who, you know, held that championship title. We could, you know, the audience was becoming so much more sophisticated and so much more appreciative of you know, of really sound wrestling and good stories and good matches, again, that we at least deserved a seat at the table, if nothing else, or some consideration. And like I said, so I think it's special in that respect, is sort of the ground that was broken.
Yeah, I would agree. What did it look like from the top of that stadium? That entrance for 12 is like insane. And when you look back on it, you're like, the spectacle of it, the fact that this is a human being on a zip line going through that whole stadium is still like, mind-blowing, especially considering in your head, you're like, okay, I got to get this entrance done. Then I got to get this 60-minute.
You got an hour.
Yeah. What's going on here?
But it's nerves. And it's again, I know if everybody's heard the story, I think, because, I mean, you know, because, again, I had to do it, you know, before every match, you know what I mean? I have a last-minute, you know, bathroom break that I have to take, you know what I mean? And there's times it's been relatively close to the gorilla position and finding a trash can somewhere like, very, very close by. Well, up there, there's no trash can.
Right.
I mean, but there is.
Bring a bag.
Well, no, but there's, you know, what whatever the stuff that insulates, there's insulation.
Right.
That absorbs. You know what I mean? So, I was able to take care of that aspect of it. And then you get hooked up. And it is, you just, I don't know, you look down on it. And it's at that time, it's really hard to take in. And you've got so much going on here. And it's the match. Honestly, the focus is, don't look like you're zeroing in on the match. Try to enjoy this ride. Try to, again, it's your entrance. It's the, you know what I mean? You got to look free and easy. But you know, again, you know what I mean? It's just, you're on this, I did it one time before, you know, I mean, we did it one time earlier that day. But you don't, you know, you're just worried about getting down there. You're not worried about having to, you know what I mean? Show excitement and be the heartbreak kid in all of that, you know? So you're not having a lot of bouncing on the wire and stuff like that.
Right.
It's just, there's a multitude of things going through your mind. But the one thing that keeps you grounded, again, is you know, once you get down there, you know, he's got his time to come to the ring, and then we got an hour. So we're going to have time to settle in one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you come back in 2002, which is like, to me, it's like the Godfather 2 of wrestling, in the sense that people are like, Godfather's greatest movie of all time, first Shawn Michaels run. People are already saying best of all time, right? And then you come back, and it's like, is that second run even better than the first run? I think it might have. And then you look at what you did, I mean, specifically at WrestleManias, right? And, I mean, the great WrestleMania matches you had anyway, whether it was with Jericho or with Kurt Angle. But, like, again, that chronological order, 23, 24, 25, 26. For me, the Cena match, the Flair match, and then the two Undertaker matches are just like, I feel like that's almost one arc in and of itself. Like, there's a story that's told from the Cena match all the way until your retirement.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, certainly not from a television standpoint, but from a personal standpoint,
yeah,
for sure. Well, again, I mean, it's so much of that is, look at the guys I was in there with. You know what I mean? I mean, just really special individuals. And again, and before that, you know, Kurt.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
absolutely.
He's a machine, for heaven's sakes. And even Vince, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean that, you know, he will give you his all, you know what I mean? And so it really was. I mean, it was a second chance. And they're almost at that point now, you're getting to almost cherry pick. You know, again, it becomes a situation of, you know, Sean, like, again, like in October, somebody's asking me, who are you looking at? What do you think about WrestleMania? And, you know, and again, and they have their suggestions. And, you know, and again, you hear, what do you think about an angle? Like, oh, yes. Because that's one I know people want to see. I know that's one of the ones where, when you're out, you hear people talk about that they would have, oh, it's too bad Sean's not here, you know.
Yep.
And then when John comes in and you watch his rise, you know, and John, what a, I don't know, the hardest worker you're ever going to find, you know, and I don't know, and a generally good dude, I guess. And then those are the kind of guys you love being out there with. And then, you know, obviously Nate is the guy that, you know, and again, for the story.
Yes.
In that match and the situation. And again, I was fortunate to get put in so many situations that were real for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to worry about, I didn't have to become anybody. I didn't have to play any role. It was me being me. It really was. It was a dude getting a second chance, and now things are on top of that second chance. Now he's getting a chance to go back and, I don't know, create wonderful art with people he never thought he'd get the opportunity to do it with. And then again, it sort of rounds out at the end with, again, sort of like you know, it's like an unspoken, an unconscious, but by now everybody knows the behind the scenes, and it's almost two old gunslingers on separate sides of the locker room who lived life differently from one another. You know what I mean? Both rebellious in their own way, but didn't see eye to eye. But at the same time, you know, every time that, you know what I mean? Every time they came out, you know, out in the front lines of the city, everybody scattered like, oh God, what's going to happen? You know, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And it is, and we're both in a different place. So it is, it's the kind of stuff that movies are made out of. And we were able to stumble upon that. And that's, like I said, that's why it's hard for me not to be reflective, because again, and as everybody knows, like, I feel like all those things are, you know, in my life, whatever they're God placed. It's like, you know, and that's why I get emotional about it. And I don't, even this run here at NXT, I don't take it for granted, because in my life, it's, you know, I will redeem you, young man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know what you did. You screwed it up and yada, yada, yada. But you've shown me, if I give you a second chance, you will make the most of it. You'll honor it. And so, anyway.
No, it's very real.
So I did. I made sure I didn't want to screw it up. You know what I mean? It was important to me.
There had to be a pressure building towards the end of your career, just in terms of the level of output, right?
Yeah.
And the expectations that we're building. But I guess also there's this other level of pressure that would come with that redemption in a very real way,
yeah,
where it's like, you got a second chance. Do not blow it.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. And trying to balance your body and your age and what is the one, it was an anxiety / fear of, you know, again, it was show me when to go. I don't want to do one more if I'm going to, you know what I mean? If it isn't your will, I don't want to, you know, because it's going so well. Again, I don't want to take advantage of it. And so it was, it, to me, it was the biggest fear for me was always going out there and missing, you know, that window, hearing it wrong, perhaps, and feeling like, you know, I go out there, I show that it's no longer there, and you go, you know what I mean? And that is, that's why, again, that's, I would, you know, my family will tell you at about, you know, late Thursday night, but early into Friday, I go into a whole, you know what I mean? I go into a whole other place, and, you know, they don't see me again until, you know, sort of, they see me visually, but I'm not there until Sunday when it's done. And when I came back, I would come back, and the emotion and the anxiety of going out there and having it, because I knew every time, like, oh my goodness, you know, whatever, me and Jericho, you know, me and John, me and Rick, we did it again. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
And it would just all come out. And I would literally, you know, clearly, literally weep there, because it was just, it finally all got to get out. And then it was, you know, and then I could go back to being dad and honey and everything else. But I wondered, that was the pressure. That was the wondering if, you know, if it was going to be there again. You know what I mean? And you don't know, you know.
Yeah.
You do. And I did, I check all my boxes. I prepare as best I can. I do everything I think I'm told. But, you know, you're still never sure until it's over.
Right. And one day it's gone and.
Yeah.
It's gone. That's it. You don't
and
have
that's
any.
That's the thing on ours. Sometimes it's gone right out there on live TV. And it's like, oh, son of a biscuit. I wish I would.
Yeah. Wish you'd told me. I was also going to ask that, though. That's a really interesting observation about your family, that, like, if it's a switch for you. Like, it seems like working at such a high level, at such a high intensity, like, there's no dimmer. There's no duck in, duck out. It's like, that's where your brain is when you're doing it, and then your brain's not there at all when you're not doing it.
Yes.
Is that kind of how you operate?
Certainly, it was. And at that time...
Or how you were operating.
I was. Yeah. I was on the second run, I was. And that's what made it so joyous, is that
yeah.
I could go to work, boom, turn it on, focus on that, and then come home and turn it off. And the only time, and it was never a problem. It was just one of those things, again, that the wife goes like, you know, she was like, are you sure you want us to go out there, you know, go to WrestleMania again? Because, you know, you really, like, come Friday, you don't, you know, you're there, but you don't really talk to us. We just feel like we might be in the way. And it's like, no, it's a weird thing. I said, but I love having you there. Your presence. I know your presence is there, and it makes me feel better. It comforts me while I'm going through it. And yeah. She's like, okay, you know, we just don't want to.
That's how you know you found a good wife, when she's like, yeah, I can accept that. I mean, yeah, that's kind of what you need out of a partner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but again, like I said, but look, it helped her. It helped her understand me. You know what I mean? It did. And like I said, and even like I said, doing this now, because like from her standpoint, she's like, you know, like, dude, you don't need to. I mean, we're cool, man. You can sit here and lay around and watch football or whatever. but she knows that this job. I have two things in my life. It's them and this.
Yeah.
I don't do anything else. But nor do I don't have a desire to either. I mean, those are the two things that bring me the most joy in my life. And from her standpoint, it's like, you know, I'm married to a man that feels like he has a gift and a purpose in his life that can't be that bad, and you know, and we're a huge part of that.
And
help him along in it. You know,
when you find something that brings you that kind of joy, but you can also excel in, and also push that outwards, where the things that you're doing are bringing a lot of other people that same level of joy. It's like, yeah. You can't ignore that.
Well, no, and again, I mean, I always, because I know it's a job and it's a business, and I do, I don't know. I don't ever like to, you know, like throw my belief system on people, but yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, again, what, you know, that I'm dead one day, and would I leave my children? I don't mean physically, but in here, what I leave them with, is it something that, you know, again, that they'll go, yeah, dad was, you know, good dude.
You
know what I mean? You know, and again, do people here, you know what I mean? That, you know, he did right by us. You know what I mean? I just want their experience to be something positive. I'd like to, I don't know, I was given a second chance. I feel like it's my place to do what I can to give back from my, you know, I'm here to serve,
yeah.
You know what I mean, in a sense, and that's what I try to tell everybody. Granted, there are times it's, you know, I'm the biggest jerk in the room because, you know, my push, or you're beating me, or my place, and again, I understand all that because it all went through my head, I accept it, and I, you know, I don't know, but at the same time, for me, those are things that come with it, but, you know, I'm believing that they'll be 40 and 50 one day, and look back on it and hopefully understand it.
Have you had moments now that you're the boss where you go all the way back and go, oh, that person wasn't trying to hold me down. Oh, that person wasn't mad at me. Now I get, that's just part of running a business. That's part of running the show.
Well, so look, I'll say this. What I do well is I see them going through or starting to go down some of the same roads and try to, you know, tell them like, hey, I've been there. You know, that's not the way to handle it. I did that, and the thing is, that's not what, you know, but, so I guess I think to answer your point, I think somewhat, I mean, I can go like, okay, what you're saying, you think you're just giving a little bit of a tit for tat, but I can see where this can steamroll into something bigger, and we don't need that. It can be problematic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And again, trust me.
Yeah.
I've been there. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so I try to at least do that. But I also, again, at the same time, I want to give them the grace and the mercy that I was given, which is, again, you're not, you know, I don't know, you're not do something and you're, you know, I don't know, you're gone or whatever. You know, you don't want to be ruling with an iron fist.
Yeah.
Because we do have young people here. You know what I mean? And they're going to, you know, they're going to make mistakes. And they look, they're also going to think they do know better. And I'm also open to learning, and I don't know that I necessarily have to be right every time by any stretch. I'm fine with not being right. And if they can teach me something new, I'm down for that. So I think they all know that. And I feel like that's what makes it a good working environment here with all of us, that it's pretty collaborative. Yes, they understand where the final word is, but everybody here gets an opportunity to share, you know, their thoughts on a particular subject.
When you're looking at WrestleMania 24 at Ric Flair and you're uttering those famous words, that the, I mean, And the fact, this is the machine that WWE is, the fact that they so perfectly framed your face and told that story, and everybody's riding with you, and you say, I'm sorry, I love you, and that last super kick comes in. I'm sorry, I love you. Was that in the moment? Was that something you thought about earlier on that you were like, ooh, that could be a moment that I could create?
Well, so I've mentioned it before. It was, that particular match was something that came to me in the middle of the night. I woke up out of a sleep, I think at like at 2 o'clock in the morning, got up out of bed, and then just, you know, went to the table and started writing. And then I'm coming down to the end of it, and, you know, that's what's, those are the thoughts that are in my head. And of course, like a little, you know, again, it's like a movie, a little, you know, teardrop, and I'm like, and I was looking, I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, is this too, like, oh my goodness, namby-pamby? I mean, a wrestling audience can be, they can be tough.
Sure.
You know, and I just thought, ooh, I don't know. But I was so, again, because it was so emotional for me, again, because I'm, you know, I knew where Rick was at that time, and I knew how important it was to him. And it was genuinely important to me because it was important to him. I wanted this to be really, I don't know, unbelievably special for him. I wanted this is my chance for him to, I don't know, say, like, you know, of all the great matches he's had, my best one was with Shawn Michaels, you know, at whatever age he was at that time, 56 or something. So there were a number of reasons I wanted it to go well, but then you're looking at this ending and it's like, sounds like a, you know, like a, I don't know, like a love story that may not really go over well in, you know, with a tough crowd.
Sure.
So, but I kept it, you know. And look, I presented that to Michael Hayes and Rick, you know, when we got there to WrestleMania, and Rick just, you know, patted me on the leg and he goes, "Thank you," and I was, you know. Still wait, like, does that thank you, like, it's good, or is that thank you? And I asked Michael, and Michael's like, oh. And he's the one that helps. Now he starts to, again, think about framing it and making it what it turned out to be. But it's still a bit worrisome. Again, I'll say this. I don't know, because I was talking about it earlier. Had social media and everything been out there the way that it is now, and, you know, you see all of those things, I'm not sure I'd have had the guts.
Wow.
To do that finish with Rick for fear that they would, you know, kick it back at us. So I think some of my, I don't know, and I don't mean to ever imply that, you know, and our fans are mean. I would have been worried about, because every now and then, like on social media, they probably won't show you the 15-year-old wrestling fan in them. You know what I mean? They're a bit guarded.
Sure.
When you're there in the moment and you're there at WrestleMania and we're, you know, you allow us to take you there, they were fine. I mean, grown men are fine, you know, whimpering and, you know, and like, oh my goodness, I'm a beautiful man. But I just don't know that I'd have had the guts to do it had I, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
had
absolutely.
Had I seen maybe what possibly could have been.
Yeah,
the other side of it. But that was my concern. I mean, I know I'm getting very long-winded on all these, but
no, I love
way
it.
Too much goes on in here than it probably should.
I think people are. I think that's the part of Sean that people want to know. I mean, that's is Sean Class still a thing at all? I mean, there was lore, yeah, right, about Sean Class, and you'd sometimes hear, you know, some of the top tier NXT Black and Gold superstars. They'd say, well, yeah, there's Sean Class, but. What happens
it's
in
top
Star?
Secret. Yeah, yeah.
What happens in Sean Class stays in Sean Class.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, there isn't, because again, there's just the role has obviously gotten much bigger. But again, it's something that we all you know, again, Ciampa will come by and Johnny will come by and we sort of talk about. Again, it's what, because it is those boys, you know, from, you know, I don't know, from Revival to Roddy to, you know, again, Johnny and Tommaso and so many others, you know, they were the ones that, I don't know, when I stepped in here, I just fell in love with, and their desire and their hunger. I don't know, again, did they dug this stuff as much as I did, and I think that they enjoyed that I still enjoyed it as much and that I was so passionate about it. And so, like I said, that's what made me fall in love with this place and know that I was going to make NXT, you know, my home.
You talked about, you know, a year and change ago when kind of 2.0 was first starting to launch and you were really, you took the reins, you know, while Triple H was recovering and getting his health on track, that you had those big shoes to fill. And you talked about those big shoes. And I couldn't help but think, I wonder if, especially now, Triple H has some sense of satisfaction because of the fact that he had to take over DX after you. Now you have to take over for my shoes.
I guess those are things we don't ever, I don't know, we don't ever think about. I don't think so. I don't know. I'll say this because, and he'd be probably not, you know, happy I would tell people this, but he's, you know, even if he's finally softened up a little bit, you know, I mean, he's not as emotional and as soft as I am, but I think, you know, having, you know, come back and stepping into the role that he's in now, he's very appreciative and thankful. And now we are just, I don't know. There's not really any one-upmanship. It's like, again, but we were, you know, we're back together again and having the opportunity to, I don't know, to give back to this business that, you know, has given us so much and invest in the future. And obviously him, you know, continue to build and make the WWE even bigger and better than it is and what it's become. So that's, I don't know, that's kind of the exciting part, you know, honestly. Because everything else now is, it really is, it's more about a friendship, again, that has lasted so long and been through a lot, just knowing that, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, hell or high water, we have each other's back in any situation. Whatever he needs, I drop everything and do it, and I know he'd do the same. So I think, you know, again, it may not be as, you know, as yeah, fun and as you know, amusing as it once was. Look, he'll still rip me from one side to the other, because I am, you know, the softer of the two of us. But he's gotten a little bit more reflective as well. He just wouldn't show it in front of anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the relationship that you guys have is incredible. And it's, I mean, it's even more mind blowing to me to think that, like, how close that you guys got as early as you did. You know, when you talk about some of the stories that you've talked about backstage and you know, the meetings, the very sort of what sound like very closed door meetings that you would have with Vince, trying to figure out, like, where are we going with this? Where are we going with that? And inevitably, Triple H is in those stories, and Triple H is by your side. And it's like, for a guy that came into the WWE in 1995 to find himself by 1997 to be in this position where you guys kind of value each other so much that he's even there by your side in those moments that early is pretty remarkable, no?
It is. No, and that's something, and I understand that people probably don't, it's hard for them to see it now because he's, you know, the head guy, and he's had such a position of influence over, you know, the last decade. But it was really tough on him early on.
And again,
it was, you know, again, at least arguably at that time, like, I was the man, and he was the one, like, again, sort of like hoping to be in there. But then things could get and would get very serious. And I'm sure there were a lot of times that he would just like, I wish I wasn't in here for this particular you know, moment and what I'm seeing here.
Yeah.
But he stuck by me, and I think he also, I don't know, I think it helped him. You can have an opinion. You know what I mean? And granted, I will, you know, I probably didn't share it correctly when I was younger. But, you know, you're allowed to have an opinion. Again, we can respectfully disagree, and as the boss, you can tell me what to do, and I will absolutely do it. But when you've opened the door to me to allow me to share my opinion, you know, I'm going to give it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it without remorse. So again, I guess I always think that there are a lot of times I think he was in there in a tough spot. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And even if he didn't know what to do. He stood there, boom, you know, steadfast by my side. And look, I wouldn't blame him if after I left, he looked at Vince and went like, no, I don't care what he said. I'm down for whatever you need. But that guy's crazy. So, but honestly, again, and that's the thing. That's why, again, he needs something. I drop everything and I'd be there. Simply because, again, he didn't have to say anything. Just his presence showed that he was, because he was in a lot of tough situations. Just by virtue of the fact that he was standing next to me.
Before I let you get back to your very, very, very busy life now, I want to ask you two things about the future. The first is about Logan Paul. You had to know, okay, this guy's got it. You know, when he went, I think that a lot of fans were like, oh, yeah, I wasn't sure about him. I don't know about wrestling fans are, you know, we're not always ready for outsiders to come in and do. And then they come in, and if they're great, then it's like, oh, please come on in. But the match with Roman was, like, remarkable. You did a lot of training with him. What is it about him that allows him to be that guy?
Well, his drive.
Yeah.
He really does. And look, again, that day, because everybody knows, you know, my age, I'm not getting in there and rolling around with them. You know, Drew Gulak and you know, Grayson Waller are in there helping us out. And, of course, you know, Shane Helms. But he's just got such, again, a real drive. He understands. He's a bright kid. He understands, again, what you were saying. I'm an outsider. They're going to take me this way. I've got no problem earning my stripes. And the best way I can do that is to be good at this. I will give it the time and the effort. Again, even in the midst of an extremely, you know, busy schedule, he's got a lot going on in his life. He's another person, again, I guess you could arguably say he doesn't need to be choosing to do this. But he is. He has a great deal of respect for it. I think that's what really helps as well. It's funny because he can sit there and, you know, do a cool flip off the top and then, you know, talk about taking that flat back. And he's walking around like, you know, pumping himself up. And again, he's a kid that's taken, you know, a right hook to the jaw. But he thinks about, you know, taking a few of those bumps, and he understands that this stuff is not easy. He has a great deal of respect for it, enough respect to work his tail off, to be good at it. And again, to not take it lightly. And I think, again, as even our fans, again, and they can be tough. But I will say, again, because I can be tough on him, but I will say in their defense, because over a lot of years with people like that, they didn't have the respect. That, you know what I mean? And I think our fans held them accountable. And you can't just step off the street and come in here and, you know what I mean? And I appreciate that. And it is. And I think that makes, you know, everybody that comes from the outside, so to speak, step up their game. And he's a guy that's set a bar now that it's going to be a lot tough to just step off the streets and, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And think you're going to come in, you know, to our house and impress our people.
You just raise the expectations like a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, deadline is this weekend. Obviously, I can't wait for it. I also can't wait for the fact that it was just announced today as we're sitting down talking, another premium live event coming up in February, the 4th, Vengeance Day. And it's a big deal. Big deal for everybody at NXT. Big deal for me. Big deal for fans because back on the road, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Vengeance Day is going to be from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yep,
that's a really big deal.
It is, and it's kind of funny, right? We're talking about, you know, going on the road. You almost want to go like, but my language, yeah, no, you know what I mean. But for us, it really is. Again, can't stress it enough. Stand and deliver last year. First time these talents have been out of, you know, the state of Florida and out of this building.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in front of a crowd, and again, a crowd that's from around the world, a WrestleMania crowd, which, again, as I think we all will agree, is even different. You know what I mean? Very different.
Absolutely.
Now they're going to go to, again, Charlotte, North Carolina with a history, a rich history, you know, of wrestling. And again, for us, it is, it's a huge deal. All of us, you know, traveling together, a big event. They understand how large it is, and getting back out of the road. And look, for us, NXT, we were talking about it earlier. We want it to go well. It's, again, it's you know, everything now. Again, this is, for me, these are my WrestleMania moments. Again, Hunter and his NXT have set a standard, right? Again, and I am, you know, I certainly, excuse me, have been doing this long enough that you don't ever try to copy anyone else. But you know, again, I want ours to be good or equally as good or good in a different way. We want it to be successful. We want the WWE to be proud of NXT. So this is a, you know, huge deal for us. It's you know, you only get one chance really to make a first impression. And I know somebody could argue that the Stand and Deliver last year was that. But again, we're talking about on our own, standalone, Saturday night. Again, not the big hype of WrestleMania and everything around it. NXT going on the road for a premium live event. It's a big deal to us. Look, we can, you know, obviously we would, you know, want everybody to come out and support us, but it is. It's a huge deal. We're all incredibly excited. We're all incredibly nervous at the same time. But, you know, we're going to get this crazy NXT crew hopped up, ready to go, and, you know, see if we can create some history in a town that's got a lot of history already built in it. But we'd like to etch one out in stone for NXT.
We'll be a part of history. Everybody that's in the Charlotte area, come out February 4th, Vengeance Day. See the show live and in person. Of course, Deadline Saturday on Peacock and WWE Network around the world. And, I mean, Sean, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you making the time and sitting down. I could talk about wrestling with you for the next 7 weeks. And just keep going and going. So I really appreciate you making
some
time.
Yeah, no, thank you. And, dude, you're always so supportive of us. That's why we have you here all the time. And, again, we appreciate you and your support.
Of course. Thank you, man.
You got it.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.